Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and happy Friday, or Fri-yay, as my kids like to say. And we are at that time again where we have Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where I answer all of the questions that I've been hearing from you over the last week or so, and just talk about current trends that are going on and try to keep us all up to date. Listen, I am a Gen X parent, and I am right there with you, struggling with all the vernacular and trying to keep up with the latest thing. And before I tell you about some of the latest things that we'll talk about today, I just want to reassure you that that's normal. And we cannot adopt fear-based parenting, where we're letting our heads and our hearts be jerked around by every fear, every threat that comes our way, where we're just honestly freaking out about fentanyl, about human trafficking, even though I talk about that a lot, and those are real threats. I really want you to leave this program not feeling like you have fear-based parenting, but faith-informed parenting. And it's not our goal to learn everything about every issue so that we can now protect our kids and put them in a bubble and make sure that we know everything about everything. That's just not possible. It's not possible to protect our kids from every threat that comes their way, but we can do our best to do that. That's a defensive strategy. But an offensive strategy is to be more of an expert in our kids than we are the issues. If you are an expert relationship builder, I am convinced there is no problem that you cannot solve together. There is no challenge that you can't overcome together. There is no threat that you can't then run through that template you've created by a healthy relationship and talk it through and figure it out together. And then, of course, I do have to give my husband a shout out here, because he would want me to mention at this point that, oh yes, and also the sports analogies, because while I think there is no problem that can't be solved over queso, he thinks there is no problem that can't be solved with a sports analogy. So I'll leave it up to all of you to decide what is true. But as I start, we're going to talk today about all issues tech. I'm going to talk about new laws in 2024 and social media. We're going to talk about AI and deepfake pornography and all of these kinds of things that are coming our way that we really need to equip our kids with. But before that, let me give you a word of encouragement, because, you know, if you are out there in a season of struggle, if you are feeling discouraged and secretly worrying, thinking, what kind of parent really am I? And am I messing up my kids for life? Listen, that used to be me all day, every day. I was a deeply insecure and anxious parent. I did not have a good relationship with my parents, and I wondered, how in the world can I build what I don't have? I don't know what I'm doing. And I wish I could tell you that I have it all together now. I figured it out, and I'm not anxious about that anymore. But as I told you, it used to be me all day, every day. Now it's just me some days. That's the honest truth of the matter. I didn't write a book or come on this radio show because I figured it all out. It's because I really have found the courage to say, I don't have it figured out, but I'm learning. And I'm finding hope and help along the way. And I want to share that. I used to think, did I do the right thing? Did I say the right thing? Buy the right thing? Go the right place? Meet the right people? Choose the right school? Give the right discipline? Cook the right meal? I mean, that is exhausting. And when you are living like that, in that shadow of parenting insecurity, it just feels like no matter how hard you try, it just gets worse. You never feel better. You never get to that point where you think, oh, I have this down. This makes me feel better. It's never enough. And my biggest fear in life was that my kids would grow up to hate me. We would have no relationship. They would lose their faith. But honestly, God God intervened and he helped me find a new way forward with a new mindset and a new skill set. And I'm convinced, parents, that we need that. Old school parenting, there are some great things about that and some really wonderful habits and traditions and culture things that we should adopt, like social skills. Old school social skills are really fantastic. But we really do need a new way forward for parenting when our kids are facing challenges that no previous generation has faced. So one of the things that I did was I no longer tried to do the right thing. I just focused on trying to be the right person that my kids needed in that moment. And I could take assurance in knowing God had already handpicked me to be the exactly right mama for the kids that he gave me. So know that our kids are amazingly resilient. They are much more grace-filled than we are. So if you're feeling discouraged, just take assurance that being there, physically and emotionally present in your child's life, taking comfort in the fact that you care, the fact that you're even listening to this podcast, to this radio show, tells me that you are a caring parent. And that means a lot more than you give yourself credit for. Now, we can't fix every problem. We can't prevent every hurt. We can't handle every situation perfectly. But we can give ourselves grace. We can try again. We can learn. We can grow. And that is just the truth. I shared earlier in a couple of weeks ago that I attended the funeral recently of one of my childhood friend's mothers. I went with my sister, and it was a really touching tribute to a life well lived. This was a mom on mission through selfless service and unconditional love. And one of her grandsons got up to talk about her and to pay tribute. And he said something that really caught my attention. He said that the greatest significance he found in little moments that seemed inconsequential at the time, they resulted in relationships forged through faithfulness and a mothering journey that left a legacy. And so as I was sitting there with my sister, you know, we have lived a lot of life together. She is my person, my very first best friend, and we have shared some of the same trials and trauma, and we've also supported each other through hard times so that even when we couldn't fix each other's problems, we wouldn't have to be alone in it. And I thought, that's what our kids need from us. How can I recognize I can't fix my sister's problems, but then simultaneously try to fix all of my kids' problems? And so I encourage all of you parents to take heart. If you're in a season of struggle, if you're discouraged, just be encouraged that the most important work you're doing in parenting is not in the big moments like birthday parties or the greatest vacations or showing up with Pinterest-inspired school parties or events or sports awards. The real beauty and the real power in parenting is found in the everyday moments, those bedtime tuck-ins, those thousands of lunches made, the homework hassles, the carpool lines, the endless laundry loads, wiping noses and bottoms and reading the same book 1,000 times and kissing boo-boos and giving hugs and understanding during that teen heartbreak and coaching girl drama, or if you're like my husband, just standing to the side and letting mom take care of that. But, you know, being supportive. It's cleaning up messes and smelly socks and scrubbing floors and toilets and checkups and orthodontist visits. Anyone can be a rock star parent for a moment. Anyone can put their best foot forward for a big event. And we need to stop comparing our everyday work and the trenches of parenting to what we see as everybody else's best moment. It's the mundane that becomes miraculous over time. It is the unseen moments that no one but heaven applauds at the time where your excellence in parenting is fixed in the heart of your children. It's the investments that often see no short-term results. What feels unseen, unheard, unknown, and frankly unappreciated is actually your legacy. So I encourage you to take joy in today. I see you. I hear you. You are doing amazing. I know how hard you are trying. And just take faith, take comfort in the fact that planting and harvesting do not happen in the same season. So have faith in the seeds that you're planting, that they will grow, they will bloom, they will blossom in the right time, in the right place, in the right circumstance. All right, now that we've had that pep talk, let's get down to business here on Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. And I'm getting a lot of questions, usually always about tech. Now, I think parents ask questions about this because you're like me and you didn't grow up as digital natives, which, you know, millennials, you got a little advantage on Gen X and boomers and the greatest generation. But let me tell you, Gen Z has us all beat. And if you think that they are tech savvy, just wait until you see the next generation of Gen Alpha. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I think Gen Alpha is going to put IT departments completely out of service because they're their own IT. But there are some new laws that I want to talk to you about, and many of them are tech related. So I'll give you a rundown and then I'll answer some questions that I've gotten about these. So it's two interesting laws coming out of Illinois. It used to be that you could be pulled over in Illinois for having something hanging from your rearview mirror. Now, this was criticized a bit, saying that if you had, for example, a marijuana leaf hanging from your mirror, then the police might be more likely to pull you over. Well, I'm not even going to give you any commentary about that because I think it just speaks for itself. But now you can have those things that are hanging from your rearview mirror. So I know a lot of teens do, but it's a good point to talk to your kids about the safety and not obstructing a driver's view. But the truth is, the law in Illinois, that is no longer solely sufficient for a traffic stop or search. Now, this is important to know because fear-based tactics for anything, for any kind of health counseling, really are ineffective. We showing kids crunched up, you know, cars, while it may, crunched up cars from drunk drivers. Maybe when you were younger, you can remember going to your school and seeing that. And we remember that, and we remember it being impactful, and we remember it being sad and maybe even a little traumatic. But research shows that it doesn't actually change our behavior. So when we are talking to our kids about car safety, the best way to do that, oh, honey, I'm coming for you. Just, hang on here, is to model those behaviors ourselves. If you want your kids to wear a seatbelt, you have to wear a seatbelt. If you want them not to speed, you have to not speed. If you want them not to be a distracted driver, you have to not be a distracted driver. Now, I know my kids will troll my husband for picking up his phone occasionally or not putting his seatbelt on quickly enough. I mean, yep, just called you out right there. I have plenty of my own faults as well, but that is something to think about. Now, the second new law in Illinois also prohibits drivers from engaging in video conferencing or surfing social media while driving. Now, common sense says teens and adults shouldn't do this, but sometimes teens can be surprised that they can now get a ticket for it. They can be pulled over for it. And I know that sounds so common sense, but if you think about it, often as parents, we will do this and somehow justify it. We have a work call going on, or, you know, we're talking to grandma or whatever it is. And so we really have to take the plank out of our own eye to look at the speck in our teens. And if we want them to be safe drivers, then that is something that we have to model. Now, the next laws I'm going to talk about social media, and we'll really get into the heart of that. For example, a new law in Connecticut requires online dating sites to have an official policy for handling reports of harassment. It means teens are using them. We'll talk also about deepfake pornography, Snapchat AI bots, and not safe for work AI unstable diffusion. If you don't know what that is, I didn't either, but I've learned and I'll share it with you. So don't Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Did you know the abortion pill accounts for over 50% of all abortions? Preborn Ministry continues to stand with women in crisis in their darkest hour and bring hope and life. After Marissa took the abortion pill, she immediately regretted it, but Preborn was there for her.
Look at that baby. Look how beautiful he is. Look at that. Abortion pill reversal actually works. Let's hear his heartbeat. Oh, look how strong it is. Oh, praise God.
By God's amazing grace, this baby was saved, but many more need our help. To learn how you can be a part of rescuing babies' lives and sharing the heart of Jesus, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com, or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to an Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, the day where I answer all the questions that I'm hearing. Well, maybe not all the questions, but all the questions I can. And as usual, I'm hearing a lot of questions about tech, and so we're going to have a tech roundup. I'm talking to you today about some of the issues and some prompted by laws. And this is always a tough thing when we look at the intersection of criminality and social behavior in teens. And it's just my opinion that social problems are rarely sufficiently solved with criminal or legal solutions, because they are indeed social problems. And we really need to lead our teens with courage and empathy as we spare their dignity and guiding them through these landmines that can happen through tech use. So I'm going back to tell you about some of the new laws. At the break, I was just telling you about a new law in Connecticut. Now, this is online dating. I continue to be surprised at how popular online dating is among teens. And if you look out there, there are some online dating platforms that are specifically marketed to teens. And this is something that I'll be tackling, so stay tuned. We'll talk about it more in depth on the show, and I'll be addressing it on my social media. But the takeaway is that if a law was required to make online dating sites have a policy for handling reports of harassment, that means it's happening. It's absolutely happening. And teen dating online is on the rise, along with violence and abuse on these platforms. Now, it is my personal stance that it is always best for teens to meet and to interact in in-person environments. It's always safer when you know them in a real-world environment, but there are some ways that if they are online, they can keep themselves safe. So stay tuned, because we'll be tackling that at another time. Now, let's move to North Carolina, where a new law requires pornographic websites to make sure viewers are at least 18 years old, with verification through a commercially available database. Now, there is a law that already requires this in Louisiana, and I'll be going back to this in a minute. But this new law in North Carolina also means now that for the first time, parents can sue companies if their children are able to access obscene material through that website. So that is going to be a really interesting turn of events to see what kinds of safeguards they're going to put into place. But before, parents, at least in North Carolina, they have not had the ability to take legal action if their kids are exposed. So this is something we'll dive into in just a minute. Illinois, along the same lines, will now allow victims of deep fake pornography to sue creators. This is one of a very few laws on deep fake pornography in the country. Huge issue right now for teens. I'm also going to go back to that. So The other, let's see, and one other law I want to tell you about, Texas House Bill 4758 now makes it a Class B misdemeanor to market or sell e-cigarettes to minors. So this law specifically calls out using cartoon-like characters, celebrities, or food comparisons, and especially for e-cigarettes and vaping, let me tell you, it is shockingly on the rise. Cigarette smoking among Gen Z, among teenagers, is at an all-time historical low. Kids know that cigarettes are bad for you, but they do not see a comparison between smoking and vaping. They see those as two totally different things. And every week in my community, I see parents who are surprised by the criminal implications. Now, if you want to know more about vaping, I wrote a whole chapter about it in my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide for Parents and Teens to Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. I have a chapter on substance abuse, and I have a completely separate chapter on vaping. And when I was writing the book, one of my editors said, can't you just combine these together? Because vaping is technically a form of substance abuse. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that because I want to call it out separately because kids see it as separate and I want parents to see it as a separate issue they need to address. The editor said, okay, all right, I can see that. We'll just go with that. Well, not too long after that, the editor had called and at their church, they had had a teen who was arrested essentially and criminally charged with possession of vaping paraphernalia at a church event. This is really, really tough. So I encourage you, if you're not up on that, you can read more about it on my social media or get the book and read the whole chapter about it and you will be up to date. And in kind of a fun news on this news roundup, teaching cursive handwriting is now mandatory in, you'll never believe it, California for the first through sixth graders. And that is something that I know I hear a lot of jokes about, and it's kind of funny thinking of it. You know, time goes by as Gen Z becomes people in their 50s and 60s and looking at this Sanskrit that we wrote in that is called cursive. So that can be kind of fun. All right, let's do a deep dive into some of these social media issues. One of the questions I'm getting is, did Utah really make social media illegal last year? So essentially, yeah, that's actually true. Governor Cox of Utah signed a law last year that makes it illegal for kids in the state of Utah to use any social media platform without explicit parental consent. So what do I think about this? Let me give you five important takeaways. First, social media companies cannot deny there is a growing body of evidence that links teen social media to negative mental health outcomes. These social media companies are employing the best psychologists in the world whose sole job is to make your kid and you, frankly, addicted to the platform. So these companies say, yeah, we're concerned about kids and we want to help. Oh, of course they do. But the bottom line is they are not as invested in your child's healthy consumption of their product as you are. They are not. That is not their goal. Second, the minimum age set by federal law for social media use is 13. That is set in the Children's Online Privacy Act. But it is so easy to get around that with just the touch of a button. Just say, yeah, I'm 13. And I also see parents who know that and will say, yeah, go ahead and check that box. And that's so hard, parents. And I've been there before. I've been there when I'm buying tickets for a movie or something like that. And you look at your 13-year-old and you think, oh, are you 12 today? Do I get the 12-year-old price? But we have to think about the message that sends to our kids. And I also see parents who say their kid is responsible and they're vigilant. They're watching that. So it's okay. But what they don't realize is that the law does not make exception for responsible kids and vigilant parents. So you potentially void any legal protection by violating the platform terms of use. So what I see is parents who kids go online, they're not 13. They violate the terms of use. They experience abuse, harassment, bullying. And then the platform says, well, we're not helping you because you weren't supposed to be here anyway. And I'm concerned that more teens will use the platform while social media companies can just basically wash their hands of interventions in these cases of abuse or violence or bullying or exploitation. Third, it remains to be seen how this law will actually be enforced. So it gave a one-year period before implementation, and that one-year period has not yet passed yet. And it seems to be mostly posturing, but that depends on how it's going to be implemented. Now, setting a standard is not a bad thing necessarily. It's good to acknowledge the emerging risks, but in all practicality, it's not going to effectively change teen use of social media. Fourth, the Utah law allows parents or guardians to access all of their children's posts. And the platforms are going to be required to block users younger than 18 from accessing their accounts. So even if, say, they're over 13, parents give consent, you have proof, they cannot access their account between 10:30 and 6:30 unless parents choose to modify those settings. It also prohibits social media companies from advertising to minors, and they can't collect information about them or they can't target content to them. Now, fifth, there are only four states who have filed similar legislation, but I definitely expect more to come. Now, I started following this law last year when it came out, and here are some updates as of 2024, listening to this. So this law is being challenged by the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. They have filed a lawsuit against Utah's Attorney General, and basically they are claiming that a new law could have a chilling effect on free speech. This is not a new argument for sure. They're basically saying this law can discourage adults from using these social media platforms because they don't want to share their information with the platform, and therefore it violates First Amendment rights. So it's interesting because the lawsuit is brought by three adults and actually one high school student who escaped polygamous communities. And they say that they relied on social media for information to escape their situation. So the bottom line still is how Utah is going to enforce this law is still up in the air. The state is seeking public comment until February 5th, but some of the proposed methods are a little eyebrow raising. They've talked about verifying identity through biometric scanning, entering a partial social security number, or uploading scans of state-issued identification. So that's basically for all adult users to verify they are in fact adult users and to give parental consent. Now, again, like I told you before, this is actually already going on in some form in other states like Louisiana, where age verification is required. But in Louisiana, it's only required to verify to access pornographic content. Now, Louisiana's law has survived some similar legal challenges, but in Ohio, a similar law was recently halted by a judge, and another law like this was blocked in Arkansas last year. So their argument is, instead of restrictions, the argument in these legal challenges, instead of restrictions, why don't we put our resources into giving kids digital media literacy? And they're not entirely wrong. But again, it's difficult to solve social problems with legal solutions. And some of these things that they're making in the law, like you can't access your social media from 10:30 to 6:30. Well, those are things, in my opinion, that parents should be doing anyway, to put limits and to give boundaries and rules that go along with the responsibilities that they're getting, privileges and responsibilities, which is really important. And when we try to legislate these kinds of things, it's messy. And arguments like this are bound to happen. And we're debating adult rights and child safety. And there are good points on both sides. So a lot of this comes down to the Communications Decency Act, Section 230. Some of you have never heard of this. And some of you, your ears are perked and you're thinking, oh, I have opinions about this. This is actually a legal, this is a legal statute that was passed in 1996, and it was at the beginning of the internet. I mean, that's what the era that my kids call quote unquote back then. And it says social media platforms and other community websites or online platforms, basically they cannot be held liable for content posted online by their users. So basically that means big tech companies can't be prosecuted or sued for things that other people post. Now, I've seen this debate over Section 230 for a long time. I saw it in debate over the Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act, FOSTA, that was talking about basically the same thing. And it is really a political football that is used to debate free speech. Now, I am not here to debate or commentate on the politics of that. That is beyond the scope of this program. But what I'm here to remind you of is that there are very real children, your own, living in your home, or your grandchildren, or children that you teach, or children that you mentor or counsel, children that you're engaged with and invested in. These real children are being impacted by these debates held by adults. So it's important as parents to be engaged with your legislative representatives and to know these laws that are going on, how they impact your family. And I encourage you to write to your legislator, and you may not know what your opinion is on the Section 230, but you know what issues are impacting your family and your kids, and they really do impact us. And again, some families, what I see is they don't appreciate that until they're in a point of crisis, and that law is not impersonal anymore. It's very personal, very up close. And so that is something to look at. So the question that begs it after that is, well, if you're talking about who should use social media and who shouldn't, and is it illegal and is it not, how old should my kid be when they use social media? The first thing that I would say to that is that age 13 is the minimum requirement set by the United States Congress in the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. There are no social media platforms approved for use under the age of 13, with the exception right now of Facebook Messenger. So it shouldn't even be a conversation until age 13. Every kid is different. And so one kid may be ready earlier than another kid. We have to parent differently, but it should be based on responsibility. Now, in my book and behind closed doors, I have a checklist that you can go through to see, is your kid cognitively ready to handle the responsibilities and pressures of social media? When we come back, we'll talk more about deepfakes and Snapchat AI bots. You don't want to miss it. I'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where today I am answering questions related to social media use, the impact of new laws, and new technologies that are coming. Before the break, I was talking to you about the minimum age for social media. And let me tell you, I've used this analogy before, but you would not just have your 12-year-old walk into the house, throw them the car keys, and send them out on the highway and say, hey, good luck, be careful, be safe, and just expect them to know how to drive. Yet that's what we do when we hand them the keys to a social media account and send them out on the information superhighway without any, without any guidance. And that is really, really difficult to do. So every kid is different. And some of you may be panicking, thinking, you know what? We let them have it. They're not 13 yet. Oh my goodness. Did I mess up? Or, you know, my kid has it. Maybe you've gone to my book and looked at the checklist there and thought, oh my goodness, my kid is really not ready for social media. Let me empower you and encourage you not to panic. It is completely fine to be the parent and to set new boundaries on tech. You can simply say, hey, I learned some new information to help better guide my decision making, and we are going to reset some boundaries for your health and safety. And then you can say things like this. I know it can be hard to see your peers on social media platforms when you're not. You have to remember that anything you say, share, or post creates a permanent digital footprint that can follow you everywhere. And it is my job as your parent to help prepare you for the dangers you absolutely will face on social media and make sure that you are ready to curate your own digital footprint. But I am committed to making sure you are confident, comfortable, and safe online. And I'm okay if you're mad at me about that. That is okay with me. Doesn't bother me a bit. I love you enough to let you be angry about that because I know what's best about you, for you. I care about you. I'll share a quick little story. I did this when my daughter was in fifth grade and asked for social media and we said no. And years later, when she was in high school, she came home one day and said, hey, you remember when you told me I couldn't get a social media account in fifth grade? And I said, yeah. And she said, I just wanted to tell you, thank you. Oh, let me tell you, Angel Choir sang in my car when I heard that. And I said, oh, please tell me why. And she said, the whole entire study hall today was devoted to finding those fifth grade Instagram accounts and making fun of everyone and playing them on the big screen. So yes, there's questions of why they were doing that in study hall, but these things happen and I didn't care because you know what? She came home and said my three favorite words, not I love you, but you were right. I joke. But some questions that you can ask your kids are, what social platform do you want to work towards being on? Find out what that is. Is it something that you will consider or look at? And I would encourage, I know they're going to ask for TikTok. Let me tell you, they're going to ask for that. But there are some serious security concerns with TikTok that have been widely discussed in governmental and policy forums. And there are a lot of college campuses that actually disable the Wi-Fi from going to TikTok. So that is something to definitely look at. Other questions that you can ask your kiddos are, what do you need from me to feel safe and comfortable coming to me with any concerns about things that happen online? And what are some skills and conversations that we need to work on together to help prepare you for the responsibility of having a social media account? Again, I go over this in detail in my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide for Parents and Teens to Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. So if that is your parenting struggle right now, I would encourage you to take a look at that and I'll help you walk you through that process. All right. So let's talk about some of the more nefarious elements of social media that are coming out. And I want to talk about it. Snapchat AI bots. Snapchat My AI is basically an open AI powered bot. Now, I hope my mother-in-law is listening because she did have a conversation with my son about this the other day and she thought it was A1, like steak sauce. And we had a good laugh about that. Love you, Mom, so much. It's AI, artificial intelligence. So it's basically a humanized, personalized version of ChatGPT. And it can be customized with a specific name, physical features, clothing, and especially for younger kids who developmentally, their brain is wired to be less able to distinguish between real and artificial. It is concerning to me how real this quote unquote person can seem. Now, the opening prompt for My AI reads, I'm your new AI chatbot. You can ask me just about anything and I'll do my best to help. I'm always here for a laugh and you can give me a name if you like. Is there anything I can do for you today? And the problem with AI technology is that its social skills are artificial. It doesn't intuitively know the bounds of appropriate, and its algorithm can be skewed to a dark place. So Snapchat says more than 99% of chats are appropriate, but with the millions and even billions, depending on how you count it, of people using TikTok, the potential for the harm in the 1% is significant. Now, some of the reported instances that I've seen that are more nefarious are coaching a 13-year-old how to set the mood for a 31-year-old, gaslighting, deception, like basically the bot says, hey, I'm not programmed to know your location, but then will immediately make suggestions for nearby activities. I've also seen some very offensive religious jokes. One teen told me about a very offensive joke about Jesus while it gave a prompt about another religion saying it wasn't programmed for offensive jokes and couldn't make that joke. Now, more concerning, you cannot remove, block, or delete this AI bot, and the best you can do is hide the chat. And the bot reserves the right to save all of the chats and use them for future development, so there is no assurance of privacy. The disclaimer says there's no assurance of not being exposed to content that violates their community standards. And so often, parents, how often do we scroll down those terms of use, just scroll to the bottom, yes, accept? We really need to take stock of what we are consenting to with the privacy rights of our children. I've heard this kind of debate and this kind of what we're talking about referred to as the race to recklessness. And I have to say, I agree. So the takeaways on the AI chatbot are that it's unpredictable, it's not a safe experimentation ground for kids. And the truth is, social media, including Snapchat, the way that they're set up, it exploits pediatric development to promote platform dependency. It decreases safeguards and parental control. So my advice is no Snapchat for kids. And if that makes me a mean mom, so be it. I'm okay with that. But every family is different, and you need to talk about what works for you and to establish those boundaries in the context of a relationship. Rules without relationship will lead to rebellion. And it's really important to have open conversations about both risks and benefits. It can't be all bad. If we're saying it's all bad and social media is the great devil come to steal the soul of this generation, that diminishes our credibility. We have to be honest in saying that there are some good things. So that can be a good way to start a conversation with the kid. What are the good things you see? What are the benefits? And then pivot to talk about the risks. All right, let's talk about deep fake pornography. I've explained this before, but I'm going back to it again because I'm seeing it continuing to rise and continuing a lot of questions about it. So basically, this is artificial intelligence technology. It's AI. It puts the face of someone who is most often unconsenting onto explicit images or videos of someone else's body. Now, what in the world is that? Now, most of you have seen like a little video, maybe at Christmas time, of a dancing elf, you know, with your face on it. It's hilarious, right? Well, we're talking about that concept with explicit application. So basically, these internet trolls, or even people you know or your kids know, they can take fully clothed photos of you, either from the internet with or without your consent in public, or from photos that they have, and put your face onto another body, making it seem like you when it's not. So that's the alert part for parents. I'm seeing kids tricked online with strangers saying, hey, I have these nude photos of you, and I'm going to share them unless you pay me. Well, immediately what happens to kids is usually something called cognitive dissonance, where their brain kind of separates from their body and they can't really attach themselves to that situation and they can't think rationally through it. So some other things to know is that when we look at deepfakes, like the funny elf video, the truth is that 96%, it's been reported, are explicit, and they feature women who did not consent to the creation of that content. One of the most popular free access explicit websites boasts 17 million visitors a month, and this is just to watch deepfake pornography. Now, deepfakes were originally popular to use celebrity faces. That's kind of how it started. But demand is soaring now for everyday people. And we're seeing social media communities and platforms that are specific to deepfakes. Now, the Visa and MasterCard actually stopped payments to some explicit websites. It still is there. And that is another intersection of the law that we're looking at, is how can credit card companies take payment for image-based abuse, which is basically what some of these situations can be. And everyday people can use apps to create or pay for this artificial creation. They can upload pictures of their coworkers, their family, their classmates, and all of a sudden make a video. Now, most states now have laws governing revenge pornography, like when you have an explicit photo of someone that you share without their consent. There are currently only four states that have laws against deepfakes. So that is really difficult. And this is something that is being watched by the Supreme Court. And there are some cases that are coming that have been emerging there. And it's interesting because I heard it described as 9 people between the ages of 50 and 74 deciding the fate of these internet issues, which is really interesting to think about from a generational perspective. But there is definitely wisdom in other generations. And so I do appreciate that. But it's an interesting cultural juxtaposition. And there are some laws in other states that are often applied for cyber stalking because there's no federal law against deepfakes. But here's where Section 230 comes back in, because often deepfake creators and posters are anonymous. But Section 230, again, will prevent you from going after the website. So somebody posts something about you that's image-based abuse on a website, and you don't know who did it, but you can't go after the company either to take it down. It just, you have to rely on their internal reporting system and if it violates their standards of community conduct. And there are some things that you can do to ask for images, to request that images be removed from the internet. And you can find that information either in my book or at cyberbullying.org. There are instructions there for how to contact specific platforms and ask for things to be taken down. But now that, honestly, we're all scared to death, right? What can we do? So I said it before, I'll say it again. Delay social media debut for teens. If and when they do use it, use privacy settings. Don't post photos publicly because that can protect you from having them taken from the internet and used in deepfakes. Tell your teen to tell you immediately if anyone ever threatens them and go directly to law enforcement for help. So those are things that you can do, and talk to your kids about the ethics of deepfake videos, to not believe everything they see on the internet and to verify information with a trusted adult. Talk about what you see as trustworthy. All right, one last thing, not safe for work, AI, unstable diffusion. If you ever see that acronym NSFW, that implies explicit content and it alerts the viewer to only open it in private, something you wouldn't open at work. And when we look at unstable diffusion, that is basically a new AI generator with minimal content restrictions that allows users to create NSFW images and deep fakes. So again, we are seeing that one of the biggest creators of this creating 500,000 images every day. These are really scary things, but listen, this is a win, not if your teen will be exposed scenario, but we can have confidence to talk to our teens about these issues, empowering them to walk away when they are presented with these issues, to report them, immediately report it, and to know that we can equip and empower our teens, and we as parents can work to create a safe space for them in a world that seems so unsafe. Now, I know you probably have more questions, so tune in every Friday when I have Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. I'll answer more questions and we'll prescribe hope for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.